Welcome to Extreme Genes, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Well, ho, 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 and welcome to America's Family History Show, Extreme Genes and ExtremeGenes.com. It is Fisher here. I'm your radio root sleuth on the program where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. And a guest today, very excited to have Nancy Moore on. She is a West Virginia woman who recently completed a trip to Slovenia. Slovenia. Where is that? How do you research there? You got to hear one of her techniques involving actually knocking on doors and asking if they know of any relatives. I mean, it's an unbelievable story. You're going to love what Nancy has to tell you coming up in about 8 minutes. Later in the show, Bernice Alexander Bennett is on. Now, she's got her own podcast we'll be telling you about. Plus, she visits the National Archives all the time. And she'll give you some tips on how you want to go there and what you could expect to find as you research in Washington, D.C. A lot of material there that escaped the fires of the South and the Civil War and other parts of the country as well. So she's going to have some real nuggets for you if you're heading east anytime soon. Oh, by the way, just a reminder, don't forget to sign up for our weekly Genie newsletter. It comes out every Monday. No, we don't spam you. And it's absolutely free. All you have to do is go to extremegenes.com. And just sign up in the little box in the upper right-hand corner of our homepage. Right now, let's head out to Boston. And our good friend, the chief genealogist of the New England Historic Genealogical Society and AmericanAncestors.org, it is David Allen Lambert. How are things in Beantown, my friend?
Oh, we're doing good. The streets are hustling and bustling with packages and people scurrying from store to store getting ready for the holidays.
That sounds like a song.
It probably is.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you, exciting news from Family Search this month about the work that was done on the Freedmen's Bureau database
we talked about
some months ago.
Yes. In fact, people were scrambling to try to get this thing done before the museum was open that this was connected to. But tell us the rest of this. This is good stuff.
Well, during the past year, over 25,000 volunteers participated in this project. People discovered more than 1.8 million names in the 4 million people that were enslaved that were mentioned in these records. It's amazing to think of how much genealogical and historical evidence has been uncovered just by volunteers.
Well, and this is one of those things that could break through that brick wall of slavery and get you back even further. And this is very exciting stuff.
Yeah, the Freedmen's Bureau records in general have been a definite boost to the genealogical work of African American researchers. And having this material on top of it from the Bureau, these records add to what was already out there. It's great that they're indexed. And all you have to do is go to discoverfreeman.org, which is a totally free website.
Unbelievable. Great.
The next story comes from Phoenix, Arizona, where a cold case has been solved by a forensic genealogist. A colleague of mine by the name of Colleen Fitzpatrick is known in the world of forensic genealogy. She is actually a PhD in nuclear physics. She's helped the Phoenix police solve a case that's been cold for over 20 years.
Wow.
Sadly, two women were murdered over 20 years ago, and they have now identified through DNA Brian Patrick Miller as the killer, and he is now scheduled to go on trial in April of 2017.
And the amazing thing about this story is, David, she actually went out and compared databases of DNA from around the world and matched it to the DNA that they believe came from the killer and came up with a last name comparing Y-DNA of who they thought that person might be. And then they went to the database of potential people of interest from back in the day, and they found that surname on the list and were actually able to prosecute the case. Unbelievable.
It really is, and hopefully this will get some closure for the families of these two young women that were murdered so long ago.
Yes.
On a lighter note, you know, you're thinking of what you might need to put under the Christmas tree this year. How about a wax figure of President William Howard Taft?
Well, he is a cousin of mine. You know, I think we've talked about this before, that you have like 14 presidents that you're related to. I think I'm related to 9. But wouldn't that be fun to take one of your presidents and actually have a wax figure of them in your home, your cousin William Howard Taft or whoever it might be?
Well, it's amazing. And all you have to do is go to the auction on January 14th in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, where they're closing down the wax figure collection of the President and First Ladies Museum. So if you want a First Lady in a ball gown, one-third scale, you can also have that. You know, if a Barbie isn't good enough for your daughter this year, why not? Speaking of gifts, I mean, we've talked a lot about what people have done with their dearly departed over the course of the past couple of years now. And this is a company company headed by Justin Crow, and they offer alternatives to regular cremation. So you can have your mom or dad made into a mug or into beads or into some form of jewelry.
Oh.
So you can carry them with you for as long as you want.
Okay, a couple of thoughts here. First of all, if you made mom into earrings and you lost an earring, how much worse would that be?
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
The other thing is if you're going to drink from a hot chocolate mug, a coffee mug, or whatever, would you really want to put that to your lips? I mean, that's really a strange story.
Yeah.
What happens when the mug breaks? It falls and a grandkid knocks it to the floor. I mean, this could be a disaster.
Talk about breaking up a family.
Yeah.
I just hope that nobody makes me like a doorstop or something like that and kicks me to the side when they don't want me around.
I've got to get this guy on the show. We're going to see what he's about.
I think that would be wonderful. My tip for the genies of extreme genes this week kind of ties into something we all have a burden with: holiday cards. What do you do with them after the holidays?
Throw them out, usually.
Well, are we throwing out a genealogical treasure? I mean, obviously, we save the letters and the photos and maybe tucked into the card. And a lot of cards are sent virtually. So these are becoming rarer and rarer as the decades move forward.
True.
So, of course, it comes down to, are you now a genealogical pack rat and save everything? Or do you save certain cards from aunts and uncles or older relatives that this may be the only form of written correspondence that you have? So it's a real tough call. American Ancestors wishes everyone happy holidays. And speaking of gifts, the free guest member database of the week from AmericanAncestors.org is the United States 1920 Census, now with images.
All right, David, always good to talk to you, and we'll see you again next week. And coming up next, I'll be talking to a West Virginia woman who recently went to Slovenia in search of her ancestors. It is Fisher here, your radio root sleuth. And, you know, one of the things I like to do during the week as I get this show ready for you is to go out and find unique stories about family history, incredible stories of discovery, interesting techniques, amazing finds, and just try to capture for you some of the excitement of those discoveries. And, of course, some of the techniques people use. And one of the techniques I found in this next story is one I don't think I've heard too much of: going to Slovenia and knocking on doors. And my next guest, Nancy Moore, is on the line with me right now. She's from Charleston, West Virginia. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good to be here.
Tell me about this Slovenian background. First of all, for people who aren't aware, where is Slovenia?
Slovenia is directly south of Austria and east of the top of Italy.
So it's way in the heart of Europe, and you have ancestry there that goes back how far? When did your Slovenian ancestors come here?
Oh, to the States?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 1905 is when my grandfather came over, and 1920 is when my grandmother came over.
So fairly recent in the big scheme of things, right?
Right.
And so you knew you still might have some cousins over there to find,
right,
and some places to see and some records to discover. You know, I've never done any Slovenian research. What does that take?
Well, there's not a whole lot on, like, Ancestry.com or even the FamilySearch.com. There's not much from Slovenia unless there's another family that is doing research, and then you can peek into their family trees.
Sure.
For my grandfather, I had nothing on either grandparent except the father of my grandfather, because he came over at the same time, too. But somebody contacted me on one of the genealogical sites and said, hey, I know a lady that wrote a book about the Oblaks, that's my maiden name, in the region that you're talking about. So he gave me access to this lady's family tree. I think she has passed away just recently, but I was able to take the Oblaks back to about 1670.
Whoa!
And now I'm interested to see where they came from, so you know, I might have to hire somebody to find that
out. Sure. But what a breakthrough for you. I mean, that had to absolutely blow your mind.
Yes, and this happened only about a week before my trip. Otherwise, I would have gone over there with nothing. but wow. names, you know.
Sure, but you had the name of the place they were from, I would assume, right?
I had the name of the section of the Capitol where my great-grandfather had moved to, but I didn't know where his birthplace was until I got that email from another Slovenian who knew the woman that wrote the book.
But you've obviously done a lot of homework. You did that before you went over there, which is the right thing to do. Were you finding they were helpful to you when you got to the archives there?
Yes. I belong to the Slovenian Genealogical Society International, and they gave me some hints. They had nothing on either of my, the Merchuns or the Oblaks, but they let me know the name of the lady in the Ljubljana Capitol's archives. And I wrote to her, and the birth certificate started coming in. And I've got that family back to great-great-great grandparents.
Well, that's really impressive for Eastern Europe. I mean, that's really unusual. You're doing a heck of a job. So you met up with a translator there, and you wanted to go places. What was that experience about, and how'd you set that up?
Awesome. Totally awesome. He showed me all the highlights as we went to the different towns. We went to the one town that my grandmother was from, which was called Randomle, and I had the old house number, and he knocked on that house door, and there was this man's grandfather was my great-grandfather's brother, so that's pretty close.
Wow.
And he called another lady in town, whose name was Merchun still, and she and her sister were the nieces of my grandmother. And they had letters from her. They knew her, you know, and they had a lot of questions.
I bet they did. But, I mean, that's an amazingly close find for
yes.
going back that far and to be on that side of the world to have that experience.
Right. My translator spoke excellent English, and he didn't have a shy bone in his body.
Well, that helps a lot. So how did he find these? He went knocking door to door?
Right. Well, it only took one door.
It only took one door. Okay, right. So you were just looking with that one address.
Well, I actually had two. I knew that the next generation back had, I knew their house number, too.
Okay. So you had the house numbers. They're still family members living there. Tell us about your experience with them. Did they wine and dine you? Did they want to take you to lunch, feed you dinner, get your stories, exchange information? What did they do?
Well, the first day we talked, they asked some questions. And then they invited me back the next day for lunch, which was really awesome.
Oh, I had to be.
Yeah, and my translator came too, and we had pork and gravy, and I think they call them smashed potatoes. They still have some chunks in them. The one sister grows herbs in her garden, including carnations. I guess they put those in salads too. And the salad was just wonderful.
So you had this cultural experience. What did you learn from that? I mean, from the things that they shared with you that you didn't think about or you hadn't known about?
Well, my mother told me, my mother's not Slovenian, but she told me that my Slovenian grandmother made stews a lot. And I was surprised to see it was more pretty much meats, potatoes, gravy, vegetables, of course, salad. And I learned that they love, and I do too, pumpkin oil.
Pumpkin oil, okay.
Yeah, you make your salad, and I even put some ranch dressing on it, and then you put a dash or whatever of pumpkin oil and a dash of maybe pomegranate vinegar, and it's pretty good.
So did they have photographs for you?
They showed me a picture of my grandmother's mom and dad and all the children. My translator took the picture, and I've lost it somehow.
No.
I've got it on a thumb drive, and I'm hoping it turns up at the bottom of a bag someday.
Oh, dear,
but
yeah.
If not, I can write them and ask them to email it to me.
And maybe your translator has a copy of that, too, right?
I don't know. We took pictures of the tombstones in two cemeteries, and I donated that to findagrave.com, which is the site that actually helped me find my great-grandmother from Slovenia. She was buried in the town where my dad is buried. But Dad didn't talk too much about his family, you know. Oh, sure. What does it matter? It's over.
Right. So you were looking, you were in the same house, though, that your ancestors actually lived in, right?
Right. Uh-huh.
What was that experience? What was that feeling like as you went room to room?
I didn't really go room to room, but the house was very solidly built. I mean, it would have to be. I didn't go into the old ones that had been in the family probably forever because they were pretty much closed up. But I went into two that had been remodeled, and they were nice and sturdy. They had a lot of wooden furniture.
What was the one thing that really struck you about this trip as absolutely magic?
Absolutely everything, but just the fact that I was able to speak to members of my family who, I think they knew I existed, but they had no idea that I was coming. It was like, here I am.
Yeah, I think there are people who are well aware that there might be second or third cousins on the other side of the pond.
Right.
And they know maybe that you must be there. But to know specifically who you are and that you come looking for them, that's got to be quite an experience for everybody involved, right?
I would figure if that happened to me here, I would be really shocked.
Yeah, and it would be fun, wouldn't it?
Yes.
You know, I love what you mentioned about the Slovenian organization, the association that you belong to, because I mm-hmm. think that's a great tip for anybody looking to go, especially into Eastern Europe and do some research, because there can be an awful lot of resources that they can share with you. Are you aware of other organizations for different countries in that region?
There is one for Hungary. I found one for Austria. They might be helpful in the future. You just do a search on the internet and say Hungarian ancestry or something like that, and all those will pop up.
Yeah, and it's a great thing to join and associate with other people trying to do the same thing, because Eastern Europe is a bit of a challenge for anybody who's ever tried to do this, and it sounds like you had an extremely successful trip.
Right. Now, the trip was organized by the Slovenian Genealogical Society International through Colander Travel, K-O-L-L-A-N-D-E-R, I believe.
Okay.
And they had done this a handful of times in the past.
So there was a group of you?
Yes, and that was another neat thing. I mean, we all knew the same Slovenian song that our grandparents and parents used to sing to us.
Oh, how fun.
Everybody knew O Miliška Pegla. And we sang it on the bus.
Well, I love hearing these stories because it really reminds me that there are a lot of adventures out there for people to have that maybe they just haven't considered is doable or how to go about it. And I think you've given people a lot of great ideas for that. Are you going to be able to extend some of those lines that you found, or is that something that's going to have to wait for another trip?
No, I did some last night, actually. My great-grandmother, I knew nothing about her background, and I found some notes that told me her sister and her mother and father.
Oh, wow. So, well, it sounds like a world of fun, Nancy, and I wish you all the success in the world as you continue to extend what most of us would consider very difficult lines to extend.
Well, thank you.
She's Nancy Moore from Charleston, West Virginia, just back from Slovenia. Coming up next, we're going to talk to my friend Bernice Alexander Bennett. She is a genealogy podcaster, plus a researcher at the National Archives. Now, she is a podcaster. She's got a show called Research at the National Archives and Beyond. It's on Blog Talk Radio, and we'll give you all the info so you can connect with her podcast as well. But I'm so jealous of Bernice because, well, Bernice, you live in Maryland. You're so close to the National Archives. And you just go down there anytime you want and go through and thumb through those original records and smell them and know that your people touched them. I mean, that is the coolest way to research ever.
It definitely is the coolest way to research. And it, for me, I feel like I'm in the genealogy candy store.
Yeah.
Just being in the Maryland area.
Well, and the point is, of course, while the National Archives records are finding their way online, finally, there are so few of them percentage-wise. I mean, most of the stuff is right there. You have to go to it. And you are an expert at that. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, Bernice, is to fill us in on what's on your mind right now. What is lighting your fire in your research world, and what are you into, and what can we learn from it?
Well, what's lighting my fire are the homestead land entry papers. And I have been tracking a group of homesteaders from Louisiana, specifically Livingston Parish, Louisiana, and they're African Americans. And my ancestor, my great-great-grandfather, Peter Clark, owned 159.33 acres of land.
Okay.
And I was told this by my grandmother. And so I couldn't imagine how could he obtain that much land and discover that he applied for a homestead. And with that came the names of witnesses. So what has been really driving me right now is to track the witnesses.
Are you finding that they're related or are they just close friends? What's the story that you're finding is the common thread with these people?
The common thread is that they're in the same community. The common thread is that they supported each other. And this is one of the kind of theories I had, that they were very close friends. And when I first saw the names, the question I raised was, well, how do they know each other? And I discovered some of them were living next door to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Others were related to some of the others, if that makes sense.
Sure.
To you.
Yes.
And so by pulling their records, and when I say pulling their records, I actually went to the National Archives and ordered the records of each of the witnesses, because I discovered that they were also homesteaders. I could then see how they were there to support each other, because they would state, I have known this person for the last 22 years, or I have known this person, I saw him yesterday. And it's stated in the homestead record, because they had to prove that there was knowledge of that claimant applying for that land and then living on that land for a period of time.
And I'm sure you've come up with some stories that relate to this that kind of blew your mind. Tell us one of those.
One of those stories is that I looked at my grandmother's 1913 marriage license. And on her license, it had the names of witnesses. One of those witnesses was also a member of the United States Colored Troops. Well, I pulled his USCT record, but I also found out that he was also a homesteader. And so I was just so excited because I just pulled the homestead record for this particular man 2 weeks ago. And I compared his signature on my grandmother's marriage license to his signature on the United States Colored Troop record, and the homestead record is the same person all the way through. So I was just jumping up and doing the happy dance because I was so excited to see that he served as a witness for my grandmother. It was my grandmother, as I said earlier, who told me that her grandfather owned land in the first place.
Sure.
So she kind of put me in that direction to go search for the truth or the facts to support her statement that her granddaddy owned a lot of land.
And that's often a challenge, isn't it? Because the stories that are passed down tend to get twisted a little bit, just like a game of telephone.
Yes, they do. They do get twisted, but sometimes you do have to follow the hint. You have to follow it because there may be some truth to it, and this is what I discovered. There was definitely truth to what she was saying. It wasn't just a fallacy.
And so do you start getting into the actual military records of the witnesses as well to just kind of understand the overall, the community, I guess, is what it would be really, right?
Yes, I do. I mean, that's why I would pull, and that's why I did pull the United States Colored Troop record, because I wanted to see what was in their story and what could they say about themselves, where they were born, why did they enlist, what battles, if any, they were in.
There you go.
This is all the information that's in the file.
And so most of these records survive where many, especially in the South, do not to this day, right?
Well, they survive because they're they're at the National Archives. Okay, so that's why these are federal records. So, yes, they are at the National Archives. They were not records that I found at the local level.
You know, we have a lot of listeners in the South and radio stations throughout the South that this can apply to, and certainly from all cultures as well, because, you know, when you've lost records in the South, burnt courthouses, the Civil War and all this, the federal archives have a lot of things that you might not even think of, yes?
Absolutely. And it's something for people to think about. I mean, that's why you have the National Archive. That is the repository for federal records. And so you definitely want to follow up to determine if your ancestors' records are at the National Archives.
And a lot of that might have to be done by actually filling out forms online, because a lot of this material isn't yet digitized, as we talked about a little bit ago.
Right. A lot of it isn't digitized. Even when you look at the homestead entry papers, you have Nebraska, which is digitized, but the other records you would have to put in a request for that original document. Also, with some of the Civil War invalid and widow's pensions, about 175,000 have been digitized. But think of the million records that have not been digitized that are still there and waiting for someone to request them.
Yeah, that's what I'm always trying to drive home, is the idea that, you know, 90% probably of all the material we're looking for is not online yet. And we have to do it the old-fashioned way and actually go someplace and smell the records and handle them and request them and maybe pay for copies, just kind of the way it used to be done, 20, 30 years ago.
That's right. I mean, if you want that record, that's what you'll have to do, or get somebody to do it for you.
So what's the best advice you can give to anybody as far as dealing with the National Archives goes?
Well, I certainly would advise individuals to review the website, the NARA.gov website, just to see what resources are available there. And then if they have an opportunity, to come to Washington, D.C., or to visit some of the regional archives, just to get a feel for what's available there. But certainly, I wouldn't tell anybody just show up at the door without having an understanding of what you're coming there for.
She's Bernice Alexander Bennett. She hosts the online blog Research at the National Archives and Beyond. You can catch it on blogtalkradio.com/Bernice Bennett. And it's a great show. And Bernice, it's so great to have you on the show finally after all this time.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show.
And coming up next, as we talk preservation with Tom Perry, he's going to tell you about virtual reality. How are you, Tom? Good to see you.
Hey, it's just so totally awesome right now. We have a software alert we're going to get to, and we're just telling everybody, hey, you still have time to get your VHS tapes into your local transfer and duplication center. Most of the good ones that I've been in contact with have room, can still do it for you, get a hold of your local guys, and get your stuff done. You still have time to get your videotapes done.
That's great.
Now, this is really, you want to hang on, put your seatbelt on, you want to be careful. You know how we love Wondershare.
Yes.
One of my texts was telling me last week, Wondershare now has a new download for virtual reality.
What?
Virtual reality. You can take your old Super 8 movies we're envisioning and reach out and touch your dead relatives.
No, come on.
This is absolutely incredible.
Wait a minute. So this means it's got to have some kind of 3D element to it, right?
Oh, it's got to. And the thing that's so crazy is I've been telling people as a joke, I said, oh, don't throw away your old film. You always want to keep everything that's optical, negatives, film, and things like that, because who knows what's going to happen in the next generation. I kind of jokingly say, hey, one day they may transfer it in 3D. I don't know if you want your home movies in 3D, but hey, you know, ha, ha, ha. And then last Saturday, I find out, oh, my goodness, it's actually coming.
Yes, virtual reality. Wouldn't that be something? So essentially, you turn around with your goggles and you're kind of scanning the video as it's happening.
Exactly.
That's
and I don't
so
know
weird.
All the technicalities of how it's going to happen. And they've been promoting it a lot on TV, not Wondershare, but people that have those big black things you put over your head that looks like, you know, you're going scuba diving.
Right.
And you always see the people reaching out because they think this is real. I mean, how cool would this be to be going back to when you were a little kid? And there you are as a little 6 or 7 year old and your parents, and you're trying to reach out and pat yourself on the head.
You know what this reminds me of is Ebenezer Scrooge being taken back in time and seeing himself as a child, as a schoolboy, and his little sister, remember?
Exactly, exactly. And that's what's so cool about this is because people always dream, oh, I'd love to go back and do this over again, or I'd love to be able to go back and see this. And with this virtual reality coming out, they're probably going to be able to do scenes in history. In fact, we were watching a JFK special the other day where now they went and scanned the old JFK footage where in the old day they just projected it. And you can see more of the car, more things that are happening because you can see the little hole there so you know they scanned the film. And can you imagine taking these kind of things and however this 3D things are going to come together, this virtual reality, and actually go there and witness something like this.
Yes. Or, are you talking about the assassination?
Exactly.
Wow.
You could witness something like that. You could be in the Apollo 11 that landed on the moon and be looking out as they're going down the stairs and maybe even be on the moon. And I mean, this just opens up so many possibilities, not just family history stuff, but all kinds of history. Go back, you know, before we even had video cameras in animation and do
sure.
these kind of things.
Absolutely. So the question is, what's the timeline on this? What are the costs? Do we know any of that?
Not really. All I know is Wondershare, they're wonderful because all their updates are free. You know, if you buy the pro package, whenever they come out with something new, you can update it. And my technician, Joshua, was showing it to me the other day where, hey, they've got this new thing. And when he first said it, I go, excuse me, what are you talking about? He says, oh, no, you know, the 3D goggles, you can. And I go, you've got to be kidding. He said, oh, no, they're making that. That's a new download, so you'll be able to go in and do it. So I don't have all the specs, but I guarantee I'm going to be getting into this because I would love to do something at Roots Tech
yes.
where we can do something where people can reach out and touch their dead relatives.
Right, right. Well, they'd have to bring their own digitized video, I would imagine, to
exactly.
make that happen. But we certainly could get some demos together for
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, that's
works.
What we're going to try to do. Find out what it is, see if we can do some demos, and then, you know, tell the people about it if you want to get into this. Then we'll know more information. But this is so exciting.
Oh, yeah, it is. And, of course, it's coming up at Roots Tech in early February, so we'll be sure to be on top of that. Tom, I'm thinking it is not much fun for you when you have to tell people that they can't use music in their videos because it's copyrighted.
It is. It is really sad, you know, but I understand it coming from that kind of a background. You have to realize that this is somebody's livelihood. It's like, you know, if you go to your supermarket and say, hey, they've got all these apples out of here, and they always buy more than what they're going to sell because they want the display to look good. So if I take one, no big deal. Well, it still is a big deal. You know, what's your own integrity worth? So you got to think about things like this. In fact, let me tell you a couple of stories. We had somebody recently that came into one of our stores that brought in a compilation CD, wanted it copied for their wedding, 200 copies made. They wanted the couple printed on the front and everything. When I saw this artwork and stuff, I started thinking, now, I hope this isn't a compilation CD. So I popped it in, and it was a compilation CD. It had, you know, major artists on it. And so I called them and said, hey, you know, we've got a problem here. This is copyrighted music. You can do this. However, you need to get a hold of the Harry Fox agency because
yeah.
they handle all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And say, hey, these are the songs I want to use. This is how many copies I'm going to make. This is what I'm doing it for. What's it going to cost? So you just go to harryfox.com and fill out all the information. And then they'll send you back a thing that says, okay, this is what it would cost. And you can say, whoa, well, this song's a little bit too high. Let me take this one out, or let me replace this one. And this is what really hurts me, is we talked to the people, and they said, oh, yeah, we've got that thing. My son will bring back the license soon. We've got it all done. It's all taken care of. Great. And so he says, hey, you know, if you need them, when's the wedding? We got to get this thing done, and kept pushing them. And they said, oh, didn't he drop it off yet? Long story short, what they were doing is they were in Illustrator or whatever, making their own licensing thing they were going to bring into us.
No, they were going to forge it to bring to you?
Exactly. And then when I started kind of feeling this, I called him back and says, hey, you know, your son hasn't brought it back yet, but make sure you get it to us quick so we can call Harry Fox and make sure everything's verified on it. And then the whole story did a 180, and then it was, you know, this is just too expensive. We're not going to do that. Now, if you've already printed the disc, that's fine. We'll buy them. And I'm going, no, we haven't printed the discs, but you can come pick up your thumb drive and everything, because what they were going to do is they were going to make their own copies with our printed disc, which even if I had printed them, once I found out about something like this, I would stop, because, you know, whether it's going to hurt that musician or not is irrelevant. It's the wrong thing to do. And what's your integrity worth? You know, what's the value of it? So you need to be careful. You want to be fair to people. You don't want people ripping you off. You want people stealing UPS packages off your porch. You shouldn't be stealing music from somebody. This is their life's work, and they should be getting a fair commission for it.
Well, absolutely. So the Harry Fox agency is great for music. Are there other places for video?
Usually you have to contact the copyright person. I don't know of a single video place that does that. But the one nice thing about video is there's a lot of public domain video out there.
Yes.
So you can go and check into that. And it will surprise you how much video is available for free or really, really inexpensive. Because so many of these young kids are, like, even teenagers in high school are creating content that is so absolutely incredible, and they're just excited to have people use it. And a lot of times they give it away free, or it costs you $5 or $6, and it's a great way to get fun footage.
And in that same vein, Tom, there is royalty-free music available through all kinds of sites. All you have to do is Google royalty-free music, and you'll find places where they're happy to give you free downloads or charge you a very small amount of money that you can use appropriate music for background for videos or old home movies.
You know, this has been around for a good 10, 20 years, and back then it was kind of sketchy, but so many people are getting into it now, there are some major creative artists that are famous that are making this kind of thing because they just love making the music. And you can go in and listen to a little piece of it and say, oh, yeah, that's what I want, and then download it for $2 or $3. And it is really good stuff.
Very good, yes.
It's not the old elevator music stuff. It is really good quality. It's awesome.
All right. Well, great to have you, Tom. And, of course, if you have a question for Tom, you can always email him at asktom@tmcplace.com. See you again next week.
My pleasure.
Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Thanks for joining us. If you missed any of the show or you want to hear segments of it again, of course, listen to the podcast. You can find it on iTunes, iHeartRadio, or ExtremeGenes.com and other places as well. Don't forget to sign up for our weekly Genie newsletter. I know, like you need another task during the holidays, right? And next week, we're going to get the full rundown on Roots Tech from FamilySearch.org. Take care. Thanks for joining us. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family.